This is the Afternoon Magazine on WILL Urbana. Good afternoon, I'm Celeste Quinn. Novelist, poet, and short story writer Charles Baxter's book, The Feast of Love, was a finalist for the National Book Award. It is now out in a paperback edition from Vintage. Here's a quick sketch of the beginning of the story. The storyteller in The Feast of Love is a writer who, like Charles Baxter, lives in Ann Arbor. And this writer's name, the character's name, is Charles Baxter. The book is filled with delicious characters. There's Charlie. We meet him right off. He's twisting and turning in his bed in a panic of disorientation. He gets up and wanders around town, coming across a fellow insomniac, Bradley W. Smith, and his dog, Bradley. Bradley, the man, not the dog, suggests Charlie write a novel and call it The Feast of Love, and that's just what Charlie sets out to do. Charles Baxter joins us this afternoon to tell us more about Charlie, Bradley, and other characters you'll find between the pages and the sheets of The Feast of Love. Charles Baxter, hello.
Hello.
How are you?
Fine, thank you.
Good. Is this character, Charles Baxter, you?
Well, he is in a way. I've been practicing a mild deception by telling everyone that he is mostly imaginary, but he does live in my house, actually the one I'm speaking to you from now, and he obviously lives on my street and in the same neighborhood, and like me, he suffers from insomnia. So there are some real resemblances between the two of us, but I can't really say that I know anyone named Bradley W. Smith or that I took a walk into a park and found my characters there, because I didn't.
Yeah. Charles Baxter, the character, says he's like an antique mirror in his home, a mirror that he tells us has lost one of its dimensions. He says, "I am glimmerless."
Right, right.
What is it like to be glimmerless, and how does Charlie feel about that?
Well, I thought that because I suffer from insomnia, and because novelists often put to work almost everything that happens to them in one way or another, often in very secretive ways, that I would use my insomnia. And a particular feature of my own is that when I wake up in the middle of the night, as invariably I do, I don't know where I am. And that's fairly common, I guess, among people who suffer from this. But I usually don't know who I am either. I don't have a clue about what it is that I do for a living or how I got where I am. And if that's not glimmerlessness, I don't know what is. And so I decided to start the book with that particular feature, and then which I think is a kind of emptiness, and then to fill up that emptiness with the products of the imagination, which in this case were all of the characters whom I was able to think up and whose voices I started to project into the book.
Mm. We move back and forth between the voices of these characters. When you were working on the book, writing it, did each voice come to you one at a time, or was there a chorus of voices coming to you?
Well, I would sometimes sit down at the desk after finishing one of the chapters and think, who haven't we heard from lately? And if it was Harry Ginsberg, I'd say to myself, well, let's let Harry have a moment or two. And if it was the waitress Chloe, I'd give her a chapter. It was pretty much a matter of who I wanted to hear from next. They didn't all come at me as a chorus all at once. They were fairly disciplined in the way they could wait. So I tried to give them a fair shake, but actually Chloe, the waitress, is the one who mm-hmm. more or less took things over.
Yeah, she comes through loud and clear, and she's a marvelous character. So is Oscar.
Well, thank you.
Two kids very much in love.
Yeah.
What was it like creating that couple?
Well, it was fun. The truth is that when she first came into the novel, I had planned for her to be a minor character, a kind of comic relief from all of the sober and dark characters who surrounded her, but she wasn't having any of that. In fact, she wanted to be a major character, and pretty quickly she became one. In fact, she became the center of the book and the person around whom the other characters, in effect, create a community. It was great to create her. I soon got to love her and always wanted her to come back on the page.
Mm-hmm. She's a wise character, I think.
Yeah, she also, I mean, she wises up as the novel goes on. I thought I had been riding a bus and I saw across the aisle from me this couple, and, you know, she was about Chloe's age, and she had piercings everywhere, and the guy was wearing a dog collar, and they still seemed to be in love with each other, and I thought it would be interesting to create a set of characters like that who would defy what most readers would think would be true about them, namely that they really wouldn't know anything about actual love and could never discover it. And in fact, Chloe does, and by the end of the novel, she's been through a lot, and I think she really is wise in the way that you say. She's learned a good deal about love and about, about grief, too, as well.
Yeah, she's one of the most honest characters I've bumped up against lately.
Yeah, well, she has the virtue of young characters and very old characters for novelists, which is that they will say almost anything. She doesn't have anything to lose by just belting out whatever truth it is that she has thought about, and so she's got that kind of sincerity. She never lies about anything. I had seen my son in a school production of A Midsummer Night's Dream when he was in eighth grade, and all of the actors were in eighth grade. And I thought, you know, there's something about this play that young adults really respond to. And I wanted to get that sense of spontaneity into the characters, and particularly into Chloe.
Mm. Are your other books about love? Are they love stories?
Well, I was thinking about this the other day. The book before this one was called Believers, and all of the stories in that book had to do with the sorts of things that you have to believe, not the big things, not God and those matters, but the small things that you have to believe in order to just get out of bed in the morning and maybe go to a job and come home. And part of that, I think, also has to do with what you have to believe in order to keep a relationship going. And two of the stories in Believers are about love. One of them is called The Cures for Love and is about a person who's in recovery from a relationship that's gone bad. And the other story is called Flood Show, about a guy who has never really gotten over relationship that he's had years and years ago. So, yeah, I think this is a subject that I almost said married to, but I better not say that.
The Feast of Love, I'm still reading it, but I'm trying to think about this idea of it. It seems to me that there's stars and there's shooting stars. The moon is here. There's a big storm that results in a power outage. And there's all this sky and stars and the power of the atmosphere being charged up. Is it fair, would it be accurate of me to say this novel contains intersecting galaxies of love?
Oh, it's fine with me if you say that. I was thinking of some of the oldest traditions of thinking about love, and, you know, those notions that our fate as lovers is in the zodiac somewhere, and that when you fall in love, everywhere you look, you see signs and wonders of what you're going through. So there is a bit of that in the book as well. And your idea of intersecting galaxies is very close to something I was thinking of, because I thought that when, well, Rilke says that love is two solitudes meeting each other, and there's the quality that I wanted to convey, that when two people really fall in love, it is like two galaxies colliding. It's like two separate worlds coming into collision. That's the excitement, and it's partly the destruction that's involved in it, too.
Mm. That big storm that results in a power outage at the mall is when Bradley meets Diana.
Right.
And theirs is a short and stormy marriage.
It's a tornado.
Yeah,
that's what they conjure up. That's how they meet, and that's what they become.
Yeah, it's his second marriage.
And,
you know, I wonder as I'm reading this, you know, as I'm getting to know Bradley a little better, I'm not quite sure how to feel about him. I'm wondering what makes the cogs of his gears turn, and, you know, is there a big stick stuck in there?
Well, I don't want to give away the plot to you. He's a kind of, he's the sort of guy who lives from one emergency to another. And if I say too much more about it, and the sort of person who proves to be the right woman for him, I'd be giving it away. But he, you know, I went to one readers group where the people in the group had just read the book, and one of the members said, "Your character Bradley, he's," and then she drew a long breath. "He's kind of exasperating," she said, and I told her that I thought that yes, indeed he was, and that I was kind of amused and touched by him at the same time. I wanted to give him the quality that Chekhov gives to his characters like Vanya in Uncle Vanya, someone who is amused by his own sadness. That is, somebody who can carry two emotions around at the same time.
And can kind of look at himself with some objectivity.
Right.
One last thing before we go. You've made me wonder if people sneak into Memorial Stadium here at Illinois to make love on the 50-yard line.
Well, they certainly did here at Michigan. I was bicycling, or they used to before they put a big brick wall around it. Now you can't get in there. But when I was... when my son was about 10 years old, we bicycled over there on a Sunday afternoon, and sure enough, in broad daylight, down on the 50-yard line, that was what was going on. Mm. It was an old tradition. I wouldn't want to say what happens in Illinois. Maybe the young people are much more moral there than they are in Ann Arbor. But I doubt it.
I wouldn't hold my breath on that one. It's been a pleasure speaking with you this afternoon.
Pleasure for me. Thank you.
Charles Baxter has been our guest in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine. His book, The Feast of Love, a finalist for the National Book Award, is now out in a paperback edition from Vintage.